Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Coming at you here, our fourth week in a row with the coronavirus crisis special report. And I will not lie, folks, morale is down here in America. Things are getting grim. Tyler and I were talking about this before we came on the air, that it's unnerving because a lot of the things we were worried about have now come to fruition. And we are sort of entering into, you know, we just sort of imagined it to about this point and didn't dare think beyond it. And now we're all kind of collectively at that point. And so it's stressful. It's stressful, man. I'm feeling stressed, and sometimes I'm scared. I'm not afraid to admit it. You know, sometimes I'm scared. This is getting pretty troubling. But I kind of dragged my feet about tonight's show. But we wanted to do it one more time at least, and you know, we'll see how it goes. Because part of me is like, as I said to Tyler at the start of the when we started talking before the show, I feel. There was sort of an urgency to do this when we first started to try and sound the alarm and you know, we weren't even particularly early to that. But to warn people that this was definitely legitimately a serious thing. And now, as I said, I don't think we have to tell anyone anymore that this is serious. It's clearly serious. So here, Tyler, I talked enough here. He is the Carole Baskin to my Joe Exotic. Does that ring a bell to you at all?
Not at all. What are you talking about?
Wow. You got to watch Tiger King on Netflix. You'll love it.
Okay.
Tyler Cochon, welcome back, buddy. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for, you and I are us. You're the co-host, man, at this point. So thanks for coming back again, brother.
Yeah. I wish it was under circumstances that were more fun, but here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of like I said. I was dragging my feet, and you were saying it's like, you know, what's the end game here, you know? But we'll see. You know, it's pretty wild, and I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it to folks. You said you hadn't looked at the numbers at all today?
No, I was actually putting together tests. Our school is still in session,
wow.
Electronically, so I was trying to finish up an exam. Yeah,
all
we
right.
Got to get the students need to be graduated so they can get out there and participate. You know, we're about 6 weeks away from their graduation, so
yeah.
Almost there, but there's still a lot of work to do.
You got to put them into shape, right? Yeah.
Well, there's certain things they got to know before they go, and boy, is it critical now. So.
Yeah, for sure. I can only imagine. That must be kind of weird. All right, so I'll give you the grim stats here from where we were. So last week, this is how frightening this is. It's gotten the curve has picked up quite a bit. We were at 104,000 cases here in America, and today we are at approximately 277,000. So we've almost, I don't know what you'd call that, tripled almost.
Yep.
I don't. There's nothing to laugh about. I don't know what the hell to say. I don't know what to say to that. You know, it's terrifying. And I said to you last week, I was like, well, it's not, because it had gone from 1,000 to 10,000 to a million. And I was like, well, no, 1,000 to 10,000 to 100,000, excuse me. And I said to you, I was like, well, it's not going to go to a million next week. And you said largely because they probably wouldn't even have enough tests to do it. But still, I mean, you know, we're past a quarter of a million at this point. So it's,
yeah,
you know, and it seems like it's going strong. And the what really worried me has been happening, and that is that the death rate has picked up, like, exponentially, where it was sort of climbing by 100 each day after we did the show last week, to the point where about a couple of days ago it kind of crossed this threshold, like, of 1,000. Now, you know, it's been hovering around 1,000 for, like, the last 3 days. Today it was 1,300, which is, like, you know, I was worried about what people would do when people started dying in the hundreds, and now it's like people, you know, next week, you know, it looks like it's going to, people are going to be dying in the thousands. It's fucking a
yes.
nightmare, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely,
right.
It's staggering. It's really staggering. You know, it really, really is. So that's
the
where we're at,
that...
about 7,500 deaths, roughly. So 7,392, so just rounded up on that. But, yeah, 7,392 deaths here in America as of tonight, April 4th. Now, go ahead, Tyler. Those are the numbers as from the front lines.
Well, the thing to keep in mind about the number of deaths is that it will lag behind the basically the total number of COVID cases diagnosed by a couple of weeks. People are going to be sick for a few weeks before they, on the average, begin to become seriously ill and expire. And so those numbers may yet sweep up the deaths, and the rate actually expand quite a bit. So
yeah.
We still, at this point, we know that there's a lot of cases out there, but we actually really don't have a very clear idea of how many. And one problem is that so many patients are either mildly infected or perhaps a quarter are asymptomatic. Now, those people apparently can still release virus. This has become the big thing. But what the actual scope of the true pandemic is yet to be determined. And it will probably only be clarified when they follow one of your suggestions, which is to do the antibody test. The other thing to watch out for is that New York is heavily hit. The tri-state area is heavily hit, the East Coast. You may see that peak next week or 10 days or so, and then a drop down. And that is not necessarily going to be signal of the end. We've got a number of different sort of sub-epicenters out there, and they will start to come forward. Just exactly what Governor Cuomo has been talking about is, you know, hey, help us now, and, you know, we'll move the resources around and help you later. There's a rationale for that. But we're in for a long, terrible haul. And you know, I'm not going to kid you. It's going to be a long time. We're going to be all very fed up with this and probably very afraid by the time it's over.
Yeah. Well, it's... you know, it's this sort of macabre observation in a sense where it was like, I think people are almost in a sense becoming numb to things too, just because the numbers kind of slowly creep up. It's only when they really hit milestones where it's like, oh shit. Like as of this week now, 1 million people around the world have been diagnosed with this thing. So
yeah, that we know of.
Yeah,
so,
of course, that's what I mean.
You know. What may actually really start to freak people out is this recommendation that came out today that when you're in public to wear a cloth mask, not the surgical mask or the what is it, N85 that they use for the professionals, but a cloth mask. And as people are using that, I mean, it's a very good idea. It may help even more than just physical distancing to break the chain of transmission. But I think it'll become a visible sign of, geez, this is not good, as more people start to conform to that idea. So if you couldn't see it before, you'll be able to see that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's certainly worrisome. You know, you hope that we're on the right path, I guess. You don't really know until you know, right?
Well,
a lot of this, we're still finding out. That's still terrified about the fact that we're like still finding out shit about this that we don't, that we didn't know. You know, like all of a sudden
every
now they're
day.
Like, you probably should wear a mask after all. It's like, oh shit,
exactly.
What?
Exactly. Yes, and you're right. Every day we find out a little bit more, and I think people have come to the recognition that asymptomatic cases are probably prevalent and possibly spreading. And, of course, that person wouldn't have any idea that anything's wrong. So, yes, every day we learn more.
Well, yeah, I was a little irritated with the more than a little, but irritated with the governor of Georgia when he said that they just found out the day before that asymptomatic people could spread it. Where it was like, dude, you know, everybody knew that, you know? I mean, we knew that for like 3 weeks.
Well, it's conceivable that they hadn't phrased it in quite that way to him, you know, about asymptomatic and we need masks or whatnot. We'll have to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Do we have to?
Oh, okay, fine. But you also have to recognize that also, even the authorities, because this is so new, some of it is reasonable best guess, and some of those guesses may not turn out. And so they may say one thing 1 week and then have to reverse it. So it's just the beast that we're fighting.
Right, right. Well, I saw kind of an assessment like that, not to absolve the Chinese, but people were saying, you know, cause we talked about it last week about, like, how people are suspicious of the numbers. Hell, I'm suspicious of the numbers. But the reasoning I heard in one sense was, like, they don't know what the hell. It's kind of like the old, like, oh, the government knows something about UFOs. Like, well, what if they don't know anything and they don't want to tell it, like they don't want to tell us they don't know anything? Or maybe it's just like, maybe they boxed it really badly and they're like, we don't want you to know, like, you think what's going on in America is bad. You should see what's really going on here. It's really fucking bad. You know what I mean? Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's, then they can't get a handle on it. So they're like, oh, shit. So it's maybe like, you know, just more like incompetence than being mystified, if you will.
Well, you know, in terms of the numbers from China, and I think we also were wondering about Russia a week or two ago about how accurate that was. I thought I saw, I should have written it down again. The New York Times had an article about how the CIA is very suspicious about the actual numbers in China. And one of the things that they felt might account for that is a need for people in the lower echelons of power to report good news to those in the upper echelons. And so they artificially deflate numbers. They don't want to report deaths. And so there's a feeling that maybe a lot more went on. Yeah. So they're actually, people would really, really, really like to know if those numbers in China are trustworthy or not, because we're trying to model. We're trying to figure out what is about to impend for New York City, for example. And we base a lot of that on the experience that we have, much of which was based on the Chinese experience. Can we trust that? You know, can we count on that? This is the thing where everything is so provisional, and that even includes numbers that, you know, we think were originally comporting with the truth. Now, it's like, geez, thank you so much, you know, for cooperating. It's just a damn mess is what it is. You know, you don't know what to believe, you don't know what to trust.
Yeah, it's a waking nightmare, man. It really is, you know. It's you live in the now. Everything's like you're in the constant breaking news cycle. It's very, like I said earlier, it's very stressful. But I said this to you before we did the show. Some people think it's a little too depressing. So I thought, you know, is there anything, a silver lining to all this? And, you know, one thing at least for me was you connect with people, you know. It kind of gives you the inspiration to call up people you haven't talked to in a long time, reconnect with people. That's kind of a nice byproduct of this.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just typing like mad today, test questions, so I haven't come out of the work cycle yet. But we're going to have new things happen, and one of the things that's liable to happen for us academically is we've been forced to adopt electronic communication measures that we never had before, such as Zoom, and other measures to deliver instruction. And one of the really powerful things about that for the future is that when we talk to our students or try to educate our students about this event through Zoom, we could contact some of the biggest experts on the planet to come in and lecture to our students that day. And you know, we could actually, you know, get a meeting of the minds that we never really thought about before. And suddenly now we kind of have seen how to do this. So, I mean, that might be a real benefit, is broadening how we go about the process of education, at least in medical school. But I'm sure other people would have similar experiences as they're trying to deliver lessons electronically. It's a pain, you know. I mean, Zoom has its own little quirks.
I've never used it. I might use it later in the month,
It's okay. It's fairly simple, but it's not particularly secure, so you have to watch out. But those can be improved. Those situations can be managed.
Yeah. Interesting. So have you picked up a hobby? Have you learned to play piano? You know, have you I don't know what you know, have you made any, you don't, do you, you see, you're not like me either. Well, you're like me in a sense where I haven't really benefited from any additional downtime from this. Not like it's much of a benefit, but, you know, that's the spin. That's sort of the spin of positivity to try and put on this, is that this is your chance, right? Write your great American novel now.
You
know, it's easy to say that to people who are, you know, it's easy to say that when you're not out of a job. So it's like, I can understand why people are like, fuck your great American novel, dude. I just lost my job. Like, what do you want me to write about? But, you know, that is sort of one of the spins on this, you know. Use the time wisely. I guess in some sense you spent, if you're cloistered with your family, you get more time with your family that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise. That's nice, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Since I'm still technically working, the people at my institution actually expect me to work. So they expect me to be there for meetings and answer the phone. And
oh, no.
All
you
that
can't
kind
do
of
do
stuff.
You do video meetings, or do you have to go to the buildings and shit?
No, we do video.
Okay.
So I haven't gone in. I'll probably head in on Monday a little bit just to see what the chair, what she's thinking about the future, and make sure my test questions have gotten delivered properly and then we're all ready to go.
So, yeah.
But, I haven't had that time to sort of try something else.
Neither have I. Really,
you know,
so.
Yeah, I guess in one sense, can't complain because we're fortunate enough not to have lost their jobs. So
right, exactly. So
I really don't know how people will cope with the stress. I mean, you've got the stress of the disease, which is freaking both of us out, and then imagine on top of that the stress of not having enough money for the activities of daily living, like eating.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I was talking to somebody about that the other night, where it's like, it's not so much that we should worry about food shortages; it's that we should worry about money shortages. Where it's like, well, people can't buy food, then they're going to, who the fuck knows what they're going to do, you know?
I agree. So,
well, just sort of put things in context, I guess, in a sense. The I thought we talked about this previously, where you said I agree with you, but it seems like they moved the government moved the timetable a little further up in a sense, where it's like you don't necessarily get what the story of the week is going to be on the morning shows, but usually by like Sunday night, Monday morning, you kind of get an idea. This happened again this week, where now it went from like last week, it was like we got to get everybody back by Easter. And now this week, it was a complete 180, and all of a sudden they were dropping some really grim numbers on everybody. And they were saying, you know, if only 200,000 people die, we did a pretty good job, which is like the most fucking asinine thing I think I've ever heard in my life. But, so that's the new narrative, which is kind of like good and in a sense where it's like, well, they ripped the fucking Band-Aid off and just told people that this is going to be really bad, which... you know, most of us have kind of been under the impression of since we locked ourselves in our homes a month ago. So at least they clued everybody else in, whether it'll take with some people. I mean, there are going to be people that will die trying not to adhere to the whatever advice and rules they throw down about this. So, you know, you're not going to convince everybody.
Yes. That is an astonishing but true fact, and you can actually see that probably in every part of the U.S. right now. I don't think that's going to work out well for everyone. We don't wish ill on anyone, but
no, of course not.
Certainly would be nice if we could all get on the same page, and that includes the governors of the states. One of the things that's very interesting is that the projections of deaths that they put out or were talking about last week, 100,000 at best, 200,000 possibly. That's if everything goes just right. And one of the things that is factored in there is a strong use of social distancing, sort of like California and Washington. And I can tell you from living here in Arizona, that is not how things are necessarily going. And our governor has been reluctant, but he has slowly instituted some of his measures, but very slowly. We just don't know, Tim, you know, where this could really end up. I just sit there and sometimes I'm baffled at why everybody doesn't see this as a cause for real concern and something we should do to save lives, you know, save lives.
Right, but, right. Yeah, it's... Yeah, it is worrisome. The only thing I can say, again, to put things in the positive, is, like, there seems, I'll never, the sin of not instituting a national lockdown, for me, is, like, unforgivable. So the fact that they still haven't done that is to me, outrageous. I'll be like one of those things that I'll always... If I can make it to being old and gray, I'll always be like, back in 2020, if they'd done the fucking lockdown, like I said. But that just really, really grinds my gears. It seems like finally it's slowly happening. We should take bets. Anyone who wants to bet who the last state will be to hold out before they, because there's only like maybe five or six more that haven't done a lockdown. So both Dakotas, South Carolina, shockingly. I thought they were a little more progressive than that. I thought they would have realized, like, that you should probably get along with what's going on here. I was really surprised by that. And, like, kind of those states around the Dakotas, that's what it looked like. But there's only a handful left, and I think they're kind of being almost slowly but surely, like, shamed into instituting a lockdown. So that maybe by this time next week, the whole country will be in all these... all these disparate fucking lockdowns that, you know, that will probably end up being unified into one when, you know, at the end of April. That would be my puncher's guess, if you will. But, you know, so maybe we're going to circumvent the weak need response from the federal government to institute a national lockdown by just individually all 50 states doing their own lockdown and then coordinating it somehow.
One thing that is true is the public health sector is largely left to the states, and sometimes it's even controlled at county level.
And, oh, yeah,
and so
yeah.
You don't have, you know, we don't have overarching federal control. I think we mentioned before that, that piecemeal patchwork approach is, has strengths and weaknesses, and this is maybe one of the weaknesses. But I have to suspect that part of the reluctance is the quality of this situation is it's something you can't see until it's really on you. And so with Arizona, you know, as the number of detections of COVID began to ratchet up, that's when we started to see some action.
Yeah.
I just wonder if other people are thinking it's
well,
not here, you know.
Yeah. Well, like I said,
real,
I mean, there's only a handful of states left, so I figure they'll get on board. But
you know, the sad part is that if they had been looking at sort of the situation and information that we have, clamping down sooner rather than later might actually prevent a disastrous rise, sudden rise in cases. And so if you want to emulate
yeah.
New York, keep doing what you're doing. You might get your chance. So,
now, one thing that keeps me up at night, not just like the, you know, oh, shit, maybe I'll get this thing, is now are we sure, like, are we sure if you get it and then you recover from it, you can't get it again? Because that part, you know, everything seems so up in the air that I'll be kind of heartbroken, like, in a week or two if they're like, oh, it turns out you can get it just over and over and over again. Then it'll be like, well, we're fucked. How sure are we that if you get it, you can't get it again?
You know, no one can phrase it the way you can.
Hey, man.
I'm
a radio professional. What can I say?
There have been some questions about that. And apparently there have been observations where some people had neutralizing antibodies and then they didn't. One of the things that you have to keep in mind for everything, for every test that we talk about, they mm-hmm. all fail sometimes. They all fail, and that includes like trying to figure out, does this person have antibody to a spike protein? We don't exactly know. We think that if we see a strong antibody response to the things like the spike protein that gets the cell infected, the virus uses as a receptor, blocks that up, that
yeah.
person should be protected. But what's interesting is with some colds, rhinovirus, structurally a little bit different, you get a really, really high level immunity for a couple of years after that cold, and then it drops down. Coronavirus could be kind of the same, that you're strong for a while, and then it'll drop down. And one little quirk about these viruses is that you need a very, very strong IgA response because it's going to try to get through the respiratory mucosa. So you got to have a lot of antibodies sitting there ready to roll. And if that drops down a little bit, the virus gets in, and all it takes with these guys is one, probably more, but one gets in, and then it just replicates exponentially. So we
yeah.
might be solid for a while, and then it'll drop down. This is very common with a lot of agents that infect us, where we're good for a while, but then over time it falls away. A lot of infections that plague little kids, respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, whooping cough, for example, that's caused
yeah.
by a bacterium. But you get solid immunity, and then it kind of fades away. And you don't have permanent lifelong immunity, whether you get vaccinated or get the infection the natural way. So this is kind of normal. So you're entirely right.
Yeah.
We could be good for a while after infection, but not forever. So
right.
What
a lot of people don't understand, I mean, I don't know, maybe you can sort of speak to this, but what a lot of people don't, maybe may not realize, like they say it'll take like a year and a half to develop the vaccine, but we're not even sure if, like, that's like a best case scenario, right? I mean, they're testing the vaccine to see if it works. So what if they finish and they're like, no, it's not, for some reason, you know, whatever, it doesn't work.
It's going to take a while. I would think if everything worked just right the first time, a year, if we're
yeah.
just really lucky and we blaze through it. Now, there are some thoughts about having alternative methods. And one of the things is, you've heard of DARPA. We've talked about DARPA before. they've sponsored companies to come up with new ways to make people immune to unknown agents. And one of the things that they talked about is a company called Moderna, and they're looking at a messenger RNA antibody, and that's it's got some hope. It's got some power. The quick steps are what we've done now. What you really have to do with this, and it basically it's just taking virus parts, messenger RNAs, and shooting them into people, rendering them immune. There are a couple of different ways to put them in that are kind of interesting. But the thing that you have to understand right now is that this particular method, not for SARS, not for the coronavirus type 2, SARS, this method has been tried for other viruses, and it has induced some antibodies. But it's slow because not everybody reacts to it. And these are young adults who are probably pretty good at reacting to stuff. You may need a booster. And so you're not, even if you get it in a year, you might not be ready for a year and a half against this virus. So even the fastest protocol may kind of fail us. But anyway, it's an approach. What is being done now is a lot of different approaches being run in parallel, and that's a good thing. So
for the vaccine, you mean?
For the vaccine, for immunization methods, there's a lot of different ideas. And
now, do we know anything else about this drug that they Trump promised? The fish tank cleaner. Like, that was rooted in some kind of fact, I assume, as small as the nugget may be. Do we know anything about this weird drug concoction he was talking about? Are they working on that? Have we heard anything about that yet? I think I would have heard if we had, but, I mean, what do you know about it?
Absolutely. The first thing that we know is don't use the fish tank cleaner. Please.
Right.
No one. That killed a guy. Out here.
Yeah, don't order it offline and shit. Like, just because somebody says it online, you shouldn't,
be very, very suspicious of anything you get online that you're going to ingest and put into your body. Okay,
absolutely.
The chloroquine, and I think chloroquine combined with azithromycin. Is in fact being looked at, has been looked at. There is a small scale study, I think, done in France, and it's really hard to tell, Tim. Okay, I think it's really. I'm looking at that and I'm going, I don't think this is going to bring people back from the brink of death.
Maybe
if you got it to them earlier, but still.
Well,
anyway,
That's kind of the thing, in a sense, where it's like, we need this shit now. Like, and they're not, whatever this stuff is he's talking about, like, unless they can roll it out mass-produced on Monday, or tomorrow, like, thousands upon thousands of people are going to die just here in America. So,
that's
the thing. The ball is rolling, the snowball is rolling downhill and, like, all of our sort of plans are long-term plans at this point.
You're right. The thing that people, I think, fail to appreciate is with an emerging pandemic like this, a virus we didn't know really anything about until suddenly it appeared, we start out behind. And as it goes, we get further behind because it will outrace us every single time. So you're absolutely right. Let's say that today the mandate comes down to say, okay, drug manufacturers, make us a ton of this stuff. It still won't come in time to save many thousands of people. So if the chloroquine works, for example, it's a good idea, in that it is a proven drug. Its side effects and its safety sort of profile are known. So it would be great if we could capitalize on that. But I also tell you that, and a lot of people may have access because these drugs have been used as anti-malarials against certain type of malaria in certain areas of the world. I'd be really cautious because those drugs are powerful and they have some really nasty side effects of their own. So you might
right.
just
I wouldn't.
End up,
yeah, that's kind of the point. Like, don't people shouldn't be like trying to self-medicate on this?
No,
and the problem in turn is that like by the time you know if this thing really works well and you know it's a partial solution to this, like we probably won't really be able to get our hands on it till like you know a month from now, let's say. It's like they're still testing it out. They're still trying. You know, it takes time to find out if it works.
Well, the thing is, we won't. The beautiful people will. But,
you know, saying I'm not beautiful?
Well, no, that's not what I meant. But
all right. Well, we got a caller, actually. So let's bring on the caller. Let's see what's up. Hope maybe they'll bring a positive spin to the proceedings. Mystery caller, I think calling from a Skype thing.
Yes, sir. This is Mike. How are you, sir?
I'm well, dude. We can barely hear you. So do you have a question? I'm not going to keep you on the air for long because you sound like you're coming in from a tunnel or something. So,
I mean, can you hear me much better now?
No, not really. What's going on? Say what's going on, brother.
For the coronavirus, you know, it is a biological warfare, and as a result, you know, so far over 1 million people catch it, and we have over 8,000 people, 80,000 people died, but so far the majority of deaths are in the United States, over 7,000 now. I mean, I want to know that why they knew that this is a worldwide event. They knew that this is a global pandemic. But why they did not take action much more sooner? This is my brother.
Alright. Is this a red pill junkie?
What? No.
Is this, I thought it was Miguel. I'm sorry, Mike. Yeah, you identify yourself. So I thought you were RPJ. Why didn't WHO do anything sooner?
I mean, why the government of the United States? Why the people in charge? They refused to take action, and yet they did an exercise. It was in 2019. And before the coronavirus even arrives in Wuhan, China. I mean, they did that because they are not ready for any pandemic. So what happened at the port? That report must be gone to some people. And why those people do not took action? And so we want to know what the hell going on. Why they did, instead of COVID-19, they pretended it's N. NCO-19 is imaginary pandemic that they were exercising for. Isn't
all right,
that weird?
All right.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Okay. I'm going to let you go because your sound is terrible, bro. So, but we'll move the conversation in that direction here. All right, there you go. Tyler, you're still there, right?
Yeah.
All right, I didn't quite get
it.
All that. I kind of got the gist of that, but it was really hard to. There was so much static there. Was it just me, or was that guy hard to hear?
No, I struggled, but I think I got the gist of it. That we've known, or the authorities have known about the coronavirus, this new one, since really 2019, basically the end of December, if not a little bit sooner. But anyway. It's been known for a long time. It also was known that it was a novel virus because we had the sequence right away. Why didn't we take action sooner? Now, I don't have firm knowledge of what the deliberative process was at the upper echelons, but I'm going to guess, this is a guess, that the first thing they thought is it's going to be similar to the SARS epidemic of 2002-2003, and that they would be able to contain this by the same methods because they were banking on, and unfortunately this was a wrong assumption, that most of the cases would show and they would be severe. And so the major effort would be finding those people and isolating them. And that's how they would bring it to heal. That didn't turn out to be the case. This is a new virus, new properties, new rules. But based on how they acted, and again, I'll point out that as late as January, some scientific societies, very high-profile scientific societies, were maintaining that containment was still possible. So I'm thinking that the advisors said, we can do this. You know, we find them, we contain them. You cut off travel from Hubei province and Wuhan, and we'll track these people down, and it's doable. And that turned out to be a wrong approach. Retrospectively, it turned out to be a huge mistake. But I think that's maybe part of the thought process is, this is bad, but we can control it. And they found out the fire was too widespread, that they couldn't stomp it out in time. But again, this is supposition on my part. Maybe if there's an investigation, some of those decision-making processes will be put out there and examined. But I think it was a bad confluence of several things. One is maybe assuming that it was similar to something that it turned out not to be, and assuming that we could get the upper hand very quickly.
Yeah, I seem to recall that sort of isolation thing. I remember at first they were just like, whenever they found people who had this, they were like, figured everybody had just come from China. So it was like, oh, okay, well, they just came from China. Then all of a sudden they found somebody who had no – I think that was up in Washington, where they were like
– Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
This person had no reason why they would have gotten this, if it was the quote-unquote Chinese virus. So it was like, how did this – and then all of a sudden, the news got – in the immortal words of my good friend Adam Gorelli, I'm now a Twitter virus expert. So, so I was told by the media that's when things kind of got serious, because they were like a communal spread. That's what I was trying. Somebody's trying to tweet me in the middle of the show. So, Chris Pinio, stop.
Damn it.
Just leave me alone. But it was like communal spread was the big issue. And now here we are, and I think I remember when it was like one of the basketball players like gave an autograph to one of the kids and somehow the kid got it from him, and it was like, this is now this thing, that thing we talked about, it was like, this is everywhere now, you know, it's like, who knows who has it and who's passing it along, and it's the start of our nightmare pretty much.
Yeah, you know, you're right, when they first began to look at this, if you showed up with the signs and symptoms of COVID, maybe it was COVID, maybe it was just regular old influenza, they wouldn't test you unless you met the criterion, which was travel to China or direct contact with somebody who had traveled to China, roughly. And then later on, it became very clear that they had sustained community transfer. Everything has been clarified retrospectively, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you look back at our approach to testing, what they did was, and they had a lot of trouble doing, was manufacture a highly sensitive and highly specific test. And I think part of their insistence on working so hard to have that kind of test, or the test that would be highly specific and sensitive, was a feeling that they had that there wouldn't be that many cases. And the reason this becomes important is that you can drive yourself mad if you're looking for a low-prevalence agent, low-prevalence infection, with an overly sensitive test. The false positives will absolutely drive you bonkers. And so they were thinking that we've got to get this down so the false positive rate is very low and we have great confidence. When we find one, we've got one. But I think that, again, informed how they went after the testing. And all these things the train just fell off the tracks, you know, in every possible way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's, I think, too, yeah. Well, I think it's important for people to kind of, you know, we'll look back on all this in retrospect. And, yes, a myriad of mistakes were made. No one's denying that. But people need to sort of remember that, like, this is a new thing that came up. So all the shit that, you know, you'd need to combat this, you had everything had to be invented from scratch. Like, they had to come up with the tests.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and now they have to try and come up with some kind of treatment. They have to come up with some kind of cure for, like, a whole new disease
yeah.
That they're still trying to understand now as they're developing this stuff.
No, absolutely correct. It's all novel. Take a look. I just did the same thing, Tim. I just did exactly the same thing. We're going back. You asked, like, well, could I get this thing again? Could it happen again? And what do? We immediately go back and say, okay, this is what we know about other cold viruses and how they work. And maybe coronaviruses
right.
works the same way. It's a very logical point to start with what you know and then try to extrapolate forward logically. Sometimes that fails. And I think you're absolutely right. We have to have some sympathy with the folks on the front lines who were making reasonable inferences, very, very logical extrapolations, only to see them fall apart. Can't help that. I mean, they did their best.
Okay, now we got a special little mini mid-show guest, Chris Pinio, my friend Chris Pinio. He likes to bother me in the chat, but he's calling in now. Because he's got some interesting information. He's a reporter. He's been covering the COVID-19
yes.
issue with regard to jails.
I know who he is. I know who he
oh,
is.
Oh, you know Chris Pinio?
Yes.
I think he's from
he
around where you are,
my,
so maybe. All right.
I think he knew me by my former Twitter identity.
Oh, so, yeah, he's a real creep. He's a real creep. But
of course.
We'll let him come on the show anyway. Let me see. Where the hell's the little button here? Come on, button. There we go. Pinio, what's up?
Hello. Hey.
All right.
Me?
Well, we can hear you a lot clearer than the last guy who called in. Thank God. So, what is this I hear about you doing some reporting on the jail situation? Because that's one that you know, it's not getting as much press coverage. It's getting some coverage, but the inherent biases against prisoners makes it so. You know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to sort of get people to take a look at this story, but it's very troubling. So tell us about what's going on in the jail.
I mean, I think it's hard to do anything because of that backlash that's been going on against the media since the beginning of this administration. But so the important thing, the first thing I want to point out is it has nothing to do with prisons, right? Prisons are a different issue. But jails, right? Local jails where they're just packing people in, and these are people that are waiting for, you know, a hearing for whatever they did or didn't do, and they're in and out. You know what I mean? So they could be, to my mind, it seems logical that they could be subjected to the virus really quickly, and then all of a sudden you have this population of people that are infected in a highly populated area. And
interesting. Okay.
You go
so you're not talking about prisons. You're talking about jails.
No, jails, right? You understand the difference, obviously.
Yes, yes. It's a very granular area. So what made you think of this, and what do you know about this? You say you've been doing reporting on it, so what do you
find out? The DA in the area, the DA where I live, had sent an email to the public defender. And she's not letting anyone out. And he was like, what the hell? He's like, I got a list of 28 people that are high-risk people, and we should kind of get them processed as quickly as possible. But he was trying to cut a deal with the DA and be like, why don't we file a joint motion, and then we'll get people out of the jail system a little bit quicker who aren't flight risks and people who don't need to be really sitting
right,
there.
Right, right. She
was just like, no, like, no. And so I ended up, when I was talking to her, she was like, I'm not going to say who it was, but she was like, you're not listening to me. I was like, whoa, Nobody's not listening to anybody here. I'm listening to you. But it sounds like what you're saying is
she said
you're
that
not
to you?
Willing to cut a deal. Yeah. I had definitely, like, I'd let her repeat her times before that. And then she, but it was, I was like,
you're
going to
get locked up in the jail with those
all.
People. You better be careful, Daniel.
Good luck. I was like, DAs cut deals all the time to get people in jail. You could real easily cut a deal to get somebody, you know, get a bunch of people out of jail so that the population of the jail is lowered, and then you have less people
right.
that are in a situation where they're very highly likely to contract the disease quickly, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sense.
I just thought it's a pretty interesting issue.
Have you looked at other jails to find out what they're doing and if they've done anything?
Well, the jails are doing something, but they can only do so much. So I called the warden. I live in kind of a small town, and like people, most law enforcement community and stuff like that knows me, so I can get.
Oh yeah, you're
access.
Definitely
going
to end up in one of these jails, Penny. What are you doing? Stop shaking the tree of power at this time. This is a dangerous decision on your part, and I advise against it.
Well,
go on.
I'm doing what you have to do as a reporter. This is the public. If you know what I mean, you can't just hold. Infection happened.
Why do I get the feeling that, like, in 2 weeks we're going to be doing a GoFundMe to get Pinio out of the Tucson jail or something? But, all right. It's worrisome. So, have you found out, you know, have you called around to other jails to find out what the situation is?
I called my one jail and talked to the warden there, and he was like, I have 130 people in the jail. I need it down to like 90 to 100 would be the maximum where I can keep them apart from each other, like keep prisoners separate. And then it's been kind of a situation where you didn't need to call around different jails. But where you are, they're doing a lot. There's some precincts that are stopped or running for certain reasons, like nonviolent, you're not going to go to jail.
They
just summons you to court. You know, so they are doing a lot in the East Coast. And the police down here were better. Like, I don't know. The DA wasn't a jerk to me at all. She was just like, just for a second, I got in an argument with her. But the police were really, like, forthcoming. And they were like, we're actually following what they're doing on the East Coast. Because that sounds like what we might end up having to do is try to depopulate the jails and then change the arrest policy to keep it so that less people are going in. And then I got a tip the other day that the cops had brought somebody in for domestic, and it was like they had just been yelling at each other. It wasn't like a real violent situation or anything. The cops brought the guy to the jail, and the warden was like, "No, he's not coming in. He's got signs of COVID," and so they just had to bring him and like drop him off a couple towns away instead of, and they didn't even bring him to a different jail. They just dropped him.
What? They just drove him fucking two towns away and left him at a bus station or some shit?
They were like, "Just don't.
Where the fuck do you live?"
For a while.
Jesus Christ!
New Mexico, dude.
Oh, okay. Tyler, you're in Arizona, so you're safe from this kind of chicanery.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I wish I was.
Oh, no.
No.
Wait, you live in Arizona? You know the deal with border towns, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bad situation we have.
Yeah. If the border – I mean, I'm speaking off the cuff here, but I feel like if the border towns get a chance that they might – a bunch of natives might die, the border towns are just going to be like, oh, just throw their hands up and let it happen.
One of the things is that we have these detention centers with a lot of children.
That's another problem. You notice nobody's talking about that whole thing, about how they were taking away kids and putting them in cages. It's like, oh, shit, are they going to get this thing now? But no one asked. Well, some people ask online, but you really ever – I haven't heard anyone report on it or anything.
I haven't either, and it's been kind of the forgotten story. We would hope that maybe the rate is less in children, but we're not sure. But you have these kids who are stuck in, and other people who are in detention who are under very stressful conditions.
Definitely not hygienic and shit and malnourished and everything else.
Everything going wrong. And so the stress alone could be a killer. It's just amazing that they haven't had, depending on their vaccine status, measles and influenza and other things just run riot in those places. Amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
And, for all we know, they have.
That's true.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's infections already in large populations in prisons and jails.
So, Pinio, what do you think they should do about the – I mean, can they even do anything about prisons and shit, or is that – I know you're a jail specialist, but –
I think prisons is a really hard situation. What are you going to do, just transfer? I don't know. Like Massachusetts has a deal with Texas, so they can ship prisoners down there if there's overflow. But prisons would just be really – it's really hard to do anything about. So, like, what are you going to – you can't let people out of prison. Although I actually heard one where a guy got –
some places they are. Like people who are going to be out in 6 months or something, they're letting them out.
Yeah. I heard one – in Albuquerque, the guy was up for parole, and so he used COVID-19 as his reason to get parole, and they paroled him.
Good. Yeah, that is good.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I was saying to somebody the other day, like, a lot of people express this concern, like, oh, it's going to lead to a police state and shit, and it's like, dude, they're letting people out of prison. They're fucking telling people they're not going to arrest them for certain crimes. It's like, this is the furthest thing from a police state. Like, this is fucking anarchy. It's not a fucking police state.
Well, I mean,
maybe it'll swing back in the other direction and it'll be harsh, but who knows?
I live on the reservoir. They'll actually, the Navajo police are at the point where they're stopping people if you're out of your house after 8.
Really?
Wow.
Well, that's the same. That's that way in a lot of towns, though. Yeah. Now, I was asked by the internet radio police to make sure that you weren't on the show past 10 my time. So we got to wrap it up here with your visit. So thank you, Tyler, for laughing at that.
Let me say goodbye.
Can people read any of your reporting on these jail things, or is this still a story in progress?
No, my stories are published, but my newspaper is kind of old school, so they don't have like online edition. So it's hard to get. It's the Gallup Independent that I'm at.
You should make yourself useful with them and take over the whole online presence for them.
No, I mean, they have an online presence. It's just they've got a paywall, so it's like
difficult
to get at it.
Yeah, who the hell wants to pay for the fucking Coyote Gazette or whatever it's called? Yeah, that sounds awful. All right, well,
dude,
I guess you can't share this shit either and be
that.
Like, oh, hey. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, man, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Peace.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye.
All right, there goes Pinio. That was interesting.
Yeah, it's another facet to the story. And, well, there are people that just don't count. And they're in a terrible situation.
Yeah, it's worrisome, yeah. It's certainly worrisome. There's all kinds of little tributaries to this whole thing that, you know, you can really drive yourself mad going down, you know. That's why I was kind of joking with Pinio. It's like, don't stir up too much trouble down there, dude. People are apt to turn a blind eye at this time. So if they're like, just throw him in the basement until he smartens up.
Well, let's hope that that's not the decision-making process. I would be interested to hear his opinion as to how so many of the prisons being run by private corporations, how that might influence their feeling about letting people out. I don't know how they do it, but I'm sure that there's a capitation level, like for every person you have, you get X number of dollars per day. And if they start tossing people out, then how does that affect their bottom line? These are the kind of paranoid rants that I have in the middle of the night where you wonder, like, wait, how does this actually work? If they let somebody out, which would be good, but then it costs them, is that going to happen? That's just me.
Yeah. That's a whole kettle of fish, because it's like if somebody gets sick with this, then the government's got to take care of them and shit. And then it's like, as I said, people are predisposed to be agitated if people in prison get anything. So it's like I can already see if there's some massive outbreak in the prison system, people will be like, ah, fuck them. They're in prison, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, come on, dude. What kind of society are we in?
Well, this is a good question. And some people just plain don't count. And I'm not trying to say everybody in prison, is innocent or some kind of super concerned about people that have committed crimes that they have to.
Yeah, there are a lot of bad people in prison. No one's.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what prisons are for.
We don't
want
them out. Yeah.
Absolutely not.
I'm just glad that I have to try to parse that decision, and say, okay, you qualify, but you don't, and it just becomes an impossible task. Like, well, yeah, you only shot somebody, but you actually killed someone. So one person leaves, the other one doesn't. My God.
Right. Or, yeah. And it's like, just don't shoot anyone again, please. We're just asking you.
I promise.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's worrisome. Well, there's all kinds of little things like that.
I can tell you.
God.
If you look at the situation in Washington State, one of the first places that was hit very hard was a long-term care facility for the elderly. And those places are at extraordinary risk. I understand that many of them have limited visitors, basically saying no visitors, trying as best as they can to control the input. But it's not unusual for places that have really elderly, debilitated populations, for example, to be decimated by influenza, even though everybody got vaccinated well before influenza appeared. And you get to a certain age and you don't respond to the vaccines anymore. So imagine what this entity, COVID-19, which is more infectious and much tougher than influenza, is going to do in these places. And it's just a question of time, unless we can break the chain of transmission.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, those of us on lockdown.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?